Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine, while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Samira Umeth. Dr. Jerry Mixon is hiking waterfalls and going around glaciers and staying very warm.
Jumping off of helicopters and skiing down glaciers.
Oh, he's in Iceland, continuing on his two-week tour with his family for vacation. And he has called us on the show in the past, so you never know.
I will not be surprised if he calls in.
Yes,
so, in fact, it'd be nice.
I know, unless he's floating on a glacier somewhere or sitting in one of those hot, steamy lagoons in Iceland. That just sounds wonderful. Well, not today because we have hot weather. But
he sent us a picture of his daughter eating the snow off the glacier.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Dr. Reuben Maiden in the studio with us today, all things heart. Cardiologist, if you've got a question, maybe you've been dealing with some things, worried about some things, maybe you're questioning, is this what's going on with my body? We would love to have you call. We invite you to call in with your questions at 800-465-8770. Okay, let's continue talking about cholesterol and some of those things we were doing right before we had to take a break.
So happy to hear that you agree with red yeast rice because it's our first go-to. And I know that you use much higher doses than I do. So when I get to that threshold, I send them on to you.
Yes, I think that unfortunately a lot of conventional physicians simply don't know the data behind red yeast rice.
Yeah.
But there's a wonderful study published in 2009. In of all places, it was published in the American Heart Journal.
Really?
Right. So it's a standard heart journal that we all read. And it used red yeast rice. They took 5,000 patients who have had heart attacks. And they randomized half of them to red yeast rice and half of them not to red yeast rice. And they followed them. It was so amazing. It was in a very short period of time. The study was analyzed at 4 years. There was a 50% reduction in recurrent heart attacks.
Wow.
And there was a 30% reduction in death and a 30% reduction in stroke. And incidentally, which was an unexpected finding, there was a 30% reduction in cancer.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so this one study really, it's not 100,000 patients, but it's 5,000 patients. And to see such dramatic results in a short period of time tells me this is a very effective agent.
Why cancer? What is it in red yeast rice that...
Right. So as you know, cancer cells multiply very rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And every cell membrane is made out of cholesterol. And so there's possibly something about inhibiting cholesterol that can reduce the rate at which cells can multiply. I know that there's an early statin trial for cancer going on right now. I don't think we're going to have the results for about 2 years. But I wouldn't be surprised if it shows some benefits based on the red yeast rice study.
Wow.
Right. And so when a lot of doctors, when our patients talk to them about red yeast rice, they say, well, there really isn't any data.
Mm.
But in actuality, there's a really amazing study that was done extremely well that most doctors just have not heard of.
Mm.
Right. But red yeast rice also has a rare incidence of side effects. As we know, statins cause muscle pains.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of controversy about exactly what all that means, but probably about one out of seven patients get some muscle syndrome on statins. It's about 1 in 200 on red yeast rice, but not zero.
Okay.
So if people start it, usually I tell people, watch if you're possibly the one. If you think you are, stop it. Restart it in 8 weeks, see if they come back. It kind of to get an idea of whether it's doing it. And I do. I use high doses. I start at 2,400 milligrams a day in divided doses, 1,200 twice a day. And I use just, I really only use a couple particular brands that I make sure are really well quality controlled.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of stuff on the market that is not regulated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, natural therapies are not regulated like pharmaceuticals. And we have to know that the quantity and the purity is there.
Right.
That's good. So
right.
don't go running to Amazon right now and ordering a bunch up and thinking, hey, I'll just start taking it. So.
And the other advice that you gave, Dr. Maiden, is also good, that you optimize CoQ10 levels before you put them on the red yeast rice.
Yeah. Now, what is CoQ10? I know I take that.
Right.
Don't know why.
So the interesting thing for red yeast rice, there haven't been studies that show that red yeast rice deplete CoQ10. And so I think it's more important to have CoQ10 for a statin drug.
Mm.
I think that at the highest doses of red yeast rice, where the statin dose might be getting up there about 12 milligrams or higher of a statin, possibly CoQ10 plays a role.
Mm-hmm.
CoQ10 is, it has an interesting name in chemistry. It's called ubiquinone. Ubiquinone are two names for it. And it's called ubique because ubiquin means common everywhere.
Present everywhere.
Present
in
everywhere.
Every cell. Yeah.
Right. And ubiquinone is a coenzyme. It serves kind of like helps vitamins do their work. And it's in every living cell of every animal on the planet.
Mm.
And so it's ubiquitous everywhere. And statins and CoQ10 and a lot of other things actually can interfere with CoQ10's ability to work inside our little energy factories, our mitochondria.
Yep.
And so CoQ10 and vitamin D can help keep the energy supply up in our cells and then prevent kind of the muscle depletion or the muscle soreness that can happen.
Great advice. And then, so if the patient fails, so the patient needs to lower their cholesterol levels for cardiac risk lowering, and we can get them there with the red yeast rice, and they are intolerant to statins. What then?
So we can't get there with red yeast rice.
No.
Right. So there are pretty good data for another drug called ezetimibe. It's a non-statin drug, has a lot less muscle side effects than statins.
Mm-hmm.
And ezetimibe has really been shown to have its best efficacy when it's added to therapy with other drugs. It hasn't shined that well as a standalone drug.
Okay.
But since ezetimibe is effective when added to statins, my opinion is, until I have a study proving me wrong, that ezetimibe is probably effective when added to red yeast rice.
Okay.
So I could add ezetimibe. There's also a host of natural therapies that can be used to further lower the cholesterol when people are drug intolerant. And they include things like polycosanol, which is sugarcane extract, gugu lipid, which is an herb from India, niacin, we all know a little bit about, but I think it's hard to tolerate. There's citrus bergamot, which is the ingredient found in this citrus-type fruit in the Mediterranean that is attributed to the longevity of a lot of people who live in the regions where citrus bergamot grows. And it's what they make, I believe, Earl Grey tea from, the bergamot.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Okay.
And then berberine is, interestingly, very effective. It's another herb that has a very powerful effect on blood sugar and diabetes, as well as cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And so those agents can be used. And I would finally don't want to miss the opportunity to mention a new class of drugs called PCSK9 inhibitors.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, again, a pharmaceutical. And people really who have severe coronary disease, say they've already had a heart attack, they've already had bypass, they can't tolerate statins, they can't get their cholesterol low enough with all the therapies we've talked about. PCSK9 inhibitors are wonderful. The drawbacks are two. One, it's an injection once or twice a month. And the second is it's very expensive. It's about $13,000 a year. And so when I start someone on a PCSK9 inhibitor, there's a lengthy pre-approval process with their insurance company,
right?
Because they want to make sure that we've really tried everything, that everything has failed. And then, you know, even then we get some pushback.
Sure.
But we do our best. And the thing that I love about PCSK9 inhibitors, so if anyone is out there is on them, Praluent, Repatha, this drug works differently than any other cholesterol-lowering drug that we have ever come up with, or pharmacology or nutraceuticals for cholesterol. Everything we use to treat cholesterol lowers cholesterol in our body.
Yeah.
One way or another, it blocks the liver from making cholesterol, or it blocks absorption of cholesterol in the gut. Everything depletes our body of cholesterol. And then we have all the concerns of what is our body going to function like? Does it have enough cholesterol? But PCSK9 inhibitors don't do that. PCSK9 inhibitors take the cholesterol from your blood and they drive it into your cells.
Mm.
And therefore your cells become completely robust with cholesterol. And that all the kind of side effects you think of that happen from cholesterol depletion don't happen with PCSK9 inhibitors. In fact, most of my patients feel incredible on them. It's like they have energy levels they haven't had before. And so if you ever come to this with your own physician's guidance, don't be afraid of it. I would say welcome it. I think if it were cheaper and they had a nasal inhalation, you know, that probably I would put everyone
more
on it.
Yes. Of the doctors would be using it. Yeah, yeah. Very cool. Is calcitonin somewhere in that? No.
No.
Okay. I do have another question about lipoprotein particle A. What do you think about those? And then how can you lower lipoprotein particle A?
Right. So if you think about all the cholesterols in our body, some of them are toxic and some of them are what are called good or helpful. And basically the toxic cholesterols are the cholesterols attached to various proteins that circulate in our blood that then pass through our vessels and deposit into our arteries.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas when you think about the good cholesterol side, that's actually proteins that are picking up cholesterol out of the plaque and carrying it away.
Right.
Right? Or modifying the way cholesterol is metabolized inside the vessel wall called oxidation. So there's good kind of good cholesterol levels, bad cholesterol levels. And of all the bad cholesterols in our blood, the LDLs, the IDLs, and LP little a, LP little a is the most toxic of all the bad cholesterols. So high levels of LP little a tends to lead to earlier problems with blockages in our arteries. It tends to be a genetic condition. If you get tested for it and you're very elevated, then you are elevated. You don't have to keep testing year after year. That's you. And if you're not elevated, you're not going to be elevated.
Oh, interesting.
So it's kind of a one-type test.
Okay.
In terms of what will lower LP little a, the real question is anything proven that lowers LP little a that improves outcome, right?
Sure.
And although some things might lower LP little a little bit, like niacin, or perhaps one of the statin drugs, rosuvastatin, there really isn't enough robust evidence that their magnitude of effect on LP little a really makes a difference. The PCSK9 inhibitors do lower LP little a, but they also lower LDL down to 20, 30, 40. And so it's hard to know if their effect on LP little a makes a difference.
Right.
But I think that there's a very interesting study that gives me a clue about this. This is a study done in women, and it looked at LP little a elevations. And in this large cohort of women, when LDL cholesterols were less than 140, LP little a had very little bearing on their long-term health.
Interesting.
Right. But we do know that people with very advanced cholesterol, that the LP little a is toxic.
Yes.
Right. Wow. It appears, though, that if you look at people who have robust responses to statins, there was a statin trial, where LDLs were brought into the 50 to 70 range, so really low.
Yeah.
When that happened, whether the people had high LP little A's or normal LP little A's made no difference.
Okay.
So my strategy for treating elevated LP little A is to
lower LDL cholesterol.
Ah.
Okay. And yeah. And again, you know, as a genetic trait, it becomes important. We do monitor it if it's high. I have used niacin, but as you said, it's very difficult to use niacin. I've actually almost given up on it. And then I almost always have to focus on how can I lower your LDL to lower your LPA.
Absolutely. That's the approach.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. We're talking with Dr. Samira Umat today, and our special guest in the studio is Dr. Reuben Maiden, and he is a cardiologist, and all things heart we want to talk with. And if you have a question, we'd love to hear your question. 800-465-8770. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine in a moment.
I'm in the longevity program in Lynnwood with Dr. Armstrong, and I'm very happy. And one of the things I realize why it's being very successful for me is that I feel like I have a personal coach.
The night was clear and the moon was yellow and the leaves came tumbling down.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. So glad you're here on this beautiful Seafair weekend. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Samira Umat, and our guest in the studio today, focusing on the heart.
Hey, how do you know it's beautiful? This room is dark.
Oh, it was beautiful
when I came
in. There's
no light. There's no sun. You can't see anything.
I'm just assuming it is as beautiful as it was when I walked in, so that when I leave, it will. But you know what?
It was cool this morning when I came in.
I love that. And even if it's cloudy with a little sprinkle or something, I don't think that's in our forecast. I still
there
think
is
it's
no,
beautiful.
No, but you know,
our
what?
Area is
I had
just gorgeous.
It was a double-edged sword this past week. I went home one day and football was on.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, football. And because, you know, I love to watch football. But then the other thought that came very quickly was, oh my God, is summer over already? Because football
yes,
is a winter
usually
sport.
Fall.
It was
yes.
like, oh yes, and oh no.
And I think we've already had both days of summer, so I think it's over.
Yeah, both days
oh,
of
we
summer.
Have, haven't
yes.
we?
Oh, yes.
And everybody God. Complained because it was so hot.
Yeah.
So my office in the clinic doesn't have any thermostat controls. So the day was really, really hot. Oh. The temperature in my office was 79 or something ridiculous like
oh,
that.
Boy.
And I told everybody that if you wanted to detox and you wanted a sauna, you can certainly go to my room and sit there for a few minutes. Nobody took me up on my offer.
I don't know why. And, that's funny. Okay, we're going to take a non-heart question, and then we're going to go back to a heart question in just a moment. Jack from Tacoma, thank you for waiting, Jack. So glad our phone lines are working. Here's the number, 800-465-8770. We are back with our callers. Hi there, Jack.
Hi, Jack. Oh, no, Jack. What happened?
Uh-oh.
I was looking
we'll
forward to
second.
Just hearing him.
I know.
I think he might have stepped away.
Okay.
So let's take Carlene until Jack gets back. Carlene had a statin question for Dr. Maiden. Hi there, Carlene.
Hi, Carlene.
Welcome.
Hi.
Oh, so nice to hear you. Thank you for your patience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was great to get on. My doctor put me on rosuvastatin, 5 milligrams. But my cholesterol is only 177. HDL is 76. Triglycerides 50. But LDL is 91. Do I really need to be on this statin?
That's a great question.
Yeah, that's a great question. And so the first question is, do you have any evidence of cholesterol disease, atherosclerosis, coronary disease, carotid disease.
Yeah. Dr. Maiden, what about if she's diabetic or has other risk factors?
Exactly. I was going to ask. So what else is in your background other than the cholesterol?
I'm not diabetic. My A1C is 5. I'm around 100, between 125 to 130 pounds.
Do you have any form of heart disease?
I am 79 years old. Okay, I'm going to read this from my last EKG. It says, sinus rhythm with first degree AV block, possible left atrial enlargement, delayed R wave progression, abnormal EKG. When compared with the EKG in 2015, the PR interval has increased. So I don't know what most of that means.
Right. So I want to get back to, do you have any known heart disease, like blockages? Have you ever had a heart attack or have blockages diagnosed?
No.
Do you have a family history of early heart disease, heart attacks, strokes, or death, people suddenly at early ages?
No.
Okay. So I would have to say that, I would have to say that it's hard to know exactly, but are they doing something to investigate your EKG? Have they recommended an ultrasound of your heart or a stress test?
They haven't done anything since that EKG.
Right. So as always, it's a little hard to be a doctor over the radio waves, you know, to know exactly what your doctor is thinking. But so this is a great question for your doctor. And that is, why do I need my cholesterol lowered more than it is right now? And that is a great question. And again, if you wanted to get a sense of, do you really have a problem with cholesterol? You'd be a great candidate for one of these coronary artery calcium scores. Yes, people develop some calcium as they get older, but still we can tell whether you're in the normal range or whether it's very high ranges. But I just wonder if there's something your doctor's thinking that they didn't share. Usually when LDLs are below 100, physicians aren't routinely starting statins. So it's hard for me to guess what someone was thinking. So I don't have a definitive answer for you, but I have two suggestions.
90.
Yeah, two suggestions. Ask your doctor specifically why they want your cholesterol even lower. And then secondly, do they need to do something to investigate your EKG?
Yeah.
Questions are always a good place to start. Mm-hmm. And I hope they're open and have a conversation with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They have prescribed metoprolol to me for irregular heartbeat, but I just kind of take that whenever I feel I need it.
Yeah, that's a much more complicated topic about when people's irregular heartbeats need to be treated. I wouldn't be able to give you much guidance over the phone around that. But really the question becomes, what is your irregular heartbeat? And have they monitored you? Do they know what it is? Do they have a specific reason why they want you on metoprolol? Is the irregular heartbeat worrisome in some way, or is it just some minor bothersome palpitations? These are just sounds like you guys could have another great conversation.
It is a great question, actually, because if she has had atrial fibrillation, a lot of times they get placed on medications like blood thinners and or statins just because they fit that criteria by age and by, you know, AFib and one EKG. But this EKG doesn't say anything about AFib. She didn't mention that.
No.
And so was it because she's on the drug or, you know, it's kind of a gray zone now. It becomes very hard.
Yeah, you're a little bit in a gray zone. I think you need more information. I encourage you to advocate for yourself and get some more information.
Mm-hmm. See, the beta blocker can make you tired. Metoprolol can definitely slow down the heart rate and rhythm. So if it is beating too fast, you do need it slowed down, because when it's beating too fast and it's irregular, it can cause increased risk for a stroke. And so that's why they slow it down by putting you on a beta blocker. But beta blockers generally can make you tired. And that's why a lot of people don't like to use them. So, and sometimes it's a first line of drug even for high blood pressure. So we don't know your high blood pressure's history either. So there's a lot of things over here that could be possible reasons why your doctor chose the drug for you. But I agree with Dr. Maiden that you do need to advocate for yourself and ask the question why and get the investigation for that EKG.
Mm. All right. Okay. Is that helpful for you, Carlene?
Yeah, I think so. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Hi there. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We have Dr. Reuben Maiden specializing in heart questions today. We would love to talk with you. Here is the number, 800-465-8770. All right. And we have Jack back on the line. Hi there, Jack. You're back.
Good morning, guys. Hey, I have two small sunspots, one on my face, one on my arm. So one, should that be something to concern? And secondly, is there any way to ameliorate that?
Brown spots, did you say? Just two of them?
Yeah, sunspots.
Are they sunspots, though? Yeah, that's the question.
I assume. I haven't seen a doctor.
Yeah.
And but see, I'm sure you'd be able to diagnose it over the telephone, right?
Of course I can. I'm Superwoman.
She is Superwoman. Yes, she is.
Superwoman. I like it. That's your new name.
Hey, Jack, the concern always with brown spots on the skin is the sinister diagnosis of melanoma. You don't want to miss that. And that's why, you know, the squamous cell and basal cell skin cancers, they are very common, common things being common, but melanoma is a killer. And so you don't want to miss that. So if you had said to me, I have tons of little brown spots and then I had sun exposure, I wouldn't be as worried. But if you're saying you have one or two lesions, then I certainly think it's time that you get in to be seen. If it's squamous cell or basal cell, they'll get rid of it. And a lot of people do get them. So that's not the worrisome bit. They'll get rid of it. Your skin will heal. If it is none of those and it is not a melanoma, then you're safer. And then if it's just the brown spot of aging, well, that is an easy thing. Bella Medica has lots of options. First of all, I would say sunblock. Make sure you're protecting your skin and preventing further sun damage. So block with, so use a sunblock or cover that area. And you said face and hand, I think. Is that what I heard or am I making
arm.
It up?
Face and arm.
Okay.
Face and Superwoman.
Arm. Okay, so, sorry. And so I would say for the face, Bella Medica can help you get rid of that. They have machines that will basically target that spot. It'll become darker and it'll just fall off. And that, a lot of people have gotten great, great results with that. And we have people who'll do them on the hand, backs of the hands also, so because sometimes our hands will age. If yours is on the arm, they can take a look at it and they can let you know whether they can help get rid of it or not. But the first step is make sure that you rule out anything sinister. Okay?
Yes. Now, would he go to his primary care doctor or should he go straight to the dermatologist? What would you suggest?
If you haven't seen a doctor in a long time, I would say it's time to see the dermatologist and get a full skin evaluation. And they're pretty, very good. This is what they do.
Yes.
They will look for any skin cancers. They look very carefully. A lot of primary care doctors may be able to tell you very quickly, but then if you need any treatment, they're going to have to send you out anyways.
Yes. Yeah, get those checked out, Jack.
I'm a longevity patient. Would my doctor be able to make a rudimentary assessment?
I would still feel comfortable if you saw your dermatologist.
Okay.
Okay. This is something that
Thank
I don't want
much.
To miss, especially if you haven't seen one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, I think be safe. I'm a great proponent of being safe.
Yes.
I would still say you go see the dermatologist, make sure it's okay. And if they say, hey, this is nothing, then sunblock it, protect yourself. But, yeah, Bella Medica can really help with that. They can get there. We have the lasers that will cause that lesion to smooth out your skin. It'll go away. Mm-hmm. It'll make it smooth. Okay?
And the Bella Medica Clinic, is that on the east side? I go to Tacoma. They don't have that capability there, do they?
No, unfortunately, they don't. Bella Medica is only in the Kirkland Clinic right now. And an easy thing to do once you're cleared is to come in for a free consultation. And if you're really interested in a treatment the same day, they can do a spot check.
Mm-hmm.
They will have to do a check before they will put the laser on you. Okay? And Bella Medica is open on Saturdays.
Yes, they are. You could call right now.
Okay.
Let me get that phone number out. Thank you, Jack. I'll give that phone number out in case somebody else is wanting. It's 866-86-YOUNG. That is 866-86-YOUNG to get through to Bella Medica for that. All right. We are Leading Edge Medicine. We would love to talk with you. We have Dr. Reuben Maiden in the studio, and we'll be back with your questions. Phone lines are wide open right now, and they are working nicely. 800-465-8770 is the number. It's 800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
I started playing in the Puget Sound Senior Baseball League when I was 51, and I started pitching. And the guys, my regular catcher for the 3 years before I started the program, was catching me one day after I'd started on the program. And he came out about the third inning and he said, "Dude, I don't know what you're doing, but you've gained about 5 or 6 miles an hour in your fastball." And I didn't go into think about longevity at the time, but I just kind of knew that that was what was making the difference.
Does she love me with all her heart? Should I worry when we're apart?
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. So glad you've tuned in today. What a gorgeous day. Seafair weekend. A lot of folks out and about. If you happen to be tuning in and listening to Leading Edge Medicine, we would love to talk with you. 800-465-8770. And we would love to talk to you, your questions, with Dr. Samira Umat and also with our special guest in the studio, Dr. Reuben Maiden. Now, you were just talking during the break, Dr. Umat. We're waiting for that next call. So go ahead, ask your question.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was, satisfying my thirst for cardiac questions and taking advantage of Dr. Maiden being here in the clinic today so I can ask him tons and tons of questions. I was actually reading recently, Dr. Maiden, that patients who have cancer, especially hematological cancers or breast cancer, they tend to succumb to cardiovascular disease a little bit after the diagnosis is made. And so the question was, not prostate cancer as much. It was very interesting that prostate cancer, although they looked at it and many people had it, that was not an issue for them. And so the question was, is it the medication that we're giving these patients with cancer that is predisposing them to cardiovascular disease? Or what is it that a cancer patient is more likely to now have cardiovascular disease? So it was kind of an interesting thought, and maybe working in reverse. It was an observational study of England, actually.
Yeah, so there's a lot of factors why a person with cancer might have a cardiovascular event. Cardiovascular disease is so common in our population that it's going to overlap, and a lot of people will have cardiovascular disease and cancer at the same time.
Mm.
And so the cancer can create an incredible stress for people, not only emotionally, psychologically, but physically, going through surgery, going through radiation is a big stress on the body. Chemotherapy is another stress. And so all of those things can be sometimes too much for a person who has underlying heart disease. A second factor is that cancer itself alters the immune system, can cause inflammation in our arteries and make them less stable and tend more likely to have heart attacks. Cancer can also alter our blood clotting system and tend us to make more likely to have blood clots. Mm. And then some of the drugs we use have acute effects and chronic effects. Some of the drugs can cause heart conditions such as inflame the heart, cause myocarditis,
right,
or cause arrhythmias. And so I think it's a very complicated topic. And then for people who have been on certain chemotherapeutic drugs, we need to follow them over years because heart disease can show up later, 10, 20, 30 years later in some of those patients that, for example, have had some of the breast cancer treatments.
Mm.
So this is a topic to always discuss with your doctor. I've had cancer, I'm going through cancer. What should we do about my cardiovascular system to make sure that it's okay?
Yeah, a great, I'm a great proponent for self-advocating. So yes, this is another thing that I will definitely be telling all of my patients as they are diagnosed with some kind of cancer to kind of discuss cardiovascular prevention with their providers. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Agreed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wonderful. Hey, let's go to the phones. In Sammamish, we have Sid on the line. Good morning, Sid.
Good morning, Sid. Thank you for your service. You're helping a lot of listeners with the information and educating them about the diseases and preventions and all that.
Thank you, Sid.
The reason that I'm calling, now I have a question about the calcium score. Let me tell you the story. Not the story, my situation. I'm 75 years old. I weigh under the normal weight. I weigh about 148 pounds, and I'm 5'5", 5'9". I'm vegan. I exercise. And over the years, I've done the treadmill, treadmill test, and always pass with the flying colors. This year, I went to my cardiologist, and he suggested I go do the calcium score. He says calcium score is much more precise as far as identifying potential problems for heart attack. So the first time and I went, and I did receive the results yesterday, and it's almost 400. So what's going on?
Right, that's a great question. You know, we all have different human biologies. And everything you've done in your life has been great and healthy. And there's no reason you shouldn't have done them. And you don't even know that they're not working, right? Because maybe without all of those things, your calcium score would be 2,000 at this point in your life. You don't know, right? But we do know that you're forming some blockage in your arteries. So there's something going on in your body. Usually blockage forms from all the risk factors we've talked about, sometimes chronic inflammation in the body, sometimes cholesterol factors, genetic factors, you know. And so for whatever reason, you're forming some blockage. And usually with a score of around 400, we do run a stress test. I don't know when your last one was, to make sure that there is no severe blockage forming. At a score of 400, there's about a 5% chance of having a severe blockage. So it's still not very high risk, but it's still possible. And then you need to mitigate factors to help prevent you from forming blockage. And it sounds like there's nothing left to do except perhaps bring your LDL cholesterols down below that 70 range with one treatment or another. I'm suspecting your LDLs are running higher than that based on the fact that you have plaque in your vessels.
Well, let me run you the number, doctor. My glucose, the last time that it was done only 2 months ago, the glucose was 99. LDL was kind of 99 also. A1C was 5.8. Cholesterol was 179. Triglycerides, 61. None of these numbers are alarming, are they?
Well, so alarming isn't the question, though. Right? Is it creating a biological impact on your health? Right? And you are a little bit pre-diabetic, you know, despite eating such a healthy lifestyle, and your LDLs are above 70. And so I wouldn't say these are things that are bad or wrong. They're just opportunities. You have opportunities now to look at how am I going to get my blood sugars lower and how am I going to get my cholesterol lower, so that I don't keep developing this biological gradient where plaque keeps forming in my arteries.
Doctor, I was reading something on the internet that there's a relation between formation of calcium in the blood and also taking vitamin D. Is that right?
Right. So it's a little bit difficult for me to describe what an association study is for you, but I'm going to do my best. So the issues around vitamin D, calcium, oral intake, and calcium in our vessels is that there's been an association. So that is, people who tend to have more vitamin D or take more calcium, they found they may have more calcium in their vessels. An association study doesn't prove cause and effect, right? And so an example of that would be, I have a study that shows that when I see smoke coming out of a building, that building is going to be destroyed. And then I conclude that smoke has something to do with the destruction of the building. But as you can see, it's just an association that smoke may not be the problem at all. The vitamin D and calcium intake may not be the problem at all. It may be, for example, people who are unhealthier, you know, who have more health problems, that their doctors say, hey, you need vitamin D, you need calcium, you know, you need this, you need that, because they're unhealthy people. And then unhealthy people have blockages or calcium in their arteries, right? It may not be. So right now I have to say the answer is unknown. Does the vitamin D intake and calcium intake really cause coronary calcification, or is it just an association that has nothing to do with a causative effect? I don't know yet. But until I do know if you have low vitamin D and low calcium, or osteopenia, osteoporosis, other, you know, fragile bones, frequent injuries. I think that you treat those until someday a study proves one way or another whether we should do it or not. That's my own personal opinion. What do you think?
No, I completely agree with you that I was smiling and thinking about this analogy that I read where ice cream sales were increasing on a hot summer day on the beach, but there were a lot of people on the beach, and then there were increased drownings on the beach as well. So is there an association between ice cream intake and drowning? And that's exactly what you're saying. We really don't know. That's something completely unknown. And then coronary artery calcification with relationship to calcium intake has been a subject that is a difficult one to answer. A lot of times people don't take enough calcium, but if you are taking a lot of oral supplementation of calcium, I do tend to, decrease that oral intake if you're worried about cardiovascular disease. What I do like to add, Dr. Maiden, and if you will talk a little bit about this, is your thoughts about vitamin K2 in cardiac calcification and its impact on plaque. And I'll tell you the story. Actually, this happened this week, and my patient is also in her 70s. She repeated a calcium score that I had done in 2019 and now, and the score went up from 230 to 350. But the LAD score was exactly the same. In fact, a little bit lower. The mass, the volume, everything decreased or was a little bit the same. The increase was in the circumflex and the right coronary artery. And she's been taking vitamin K2. And so I wanted to ask you a little bit, and I'll tell you then what I told her as a follow-up.
Right. So I have a perfect answer to K2. I don't know.
Okay.
I think the studies are early.
Okay.
There's definitely suggestive studies that K2 could potentially help prevent coronary calcification. Certainly we have some animal data that's highly suggestive. We don't have any human clinical trials that that K2 will do that in humans over long term. Like your one patient, her calcium went up in some arteries and down in another.
Right.
And so what is the K2 doing? But yeah. I think the other question, and this is a really far out question, is calcium in our vessels to a certain extent healthy?
Yeah.
Mm. Right? Because calcium can stabilize plaques.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Statins raise calcium in vessels and yet reduce heart attacks.
Yeah.
And so calcium may stabilize plaques, and simply reducing calcium may not be the goal.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. That music means we need to take a break. Hey, we're going to take a break.
Don't go
real
anywhere.
Quick.
Stay right there.
Yeah, stay right there, Sid. We're going to be back, and we're going to talk more about that in just a moment. Right after the break. This is Leading Edge Medicine.
My wife was the one who listened. She goes, "You got to listen to this guy. It makes a lot of sense. You know, he just made a lot of good common sense. You know, like you said, you don't measure, you don't know. I mean, physically, I'm stronger and faster than I was 10 years ago."
Yeah, my man. All right.
And we're back, Leading Edge Medicine. Hey! Yeah, we're back. Dr. Reuben Maiden in the studio today. I love this. We have Dr. Reuben Maiden here, cardiologist. A lot of folks asking the heart questions today. You can too, 800-465-8770. Dr. Samira Umat here as well. And we have Sid on the line. Thank you, Sid, for holding. We'll continue talking about the calcium.
So my question to you before the break is that I'm a strong believer of the taking daily vitamins. I do take multivitamins for adults, for seniors. Also, I take the calcium and I take vitamin D. So am I hearing that I probably have to stop taking all those vitamins? Probably there is a relationship between the vitamin intakes and the calcium score?
No, I'm afraid I wasn't clear enough. There is no study that definitively shows the vitamin D and calcium intake are bad for your heart. We just have some suggestive studies, and the answers are not yet known. But your opportunities for your health are to get your cholesterol lower and get your blood sugars lower, and so maybe work with your doctor or your naturopath at finding ways to do that.
I would also say measure your vitamin D level, know where you're at so that you know how much to take. And then Dr. Maiden is right that your goal should be to keep that LDL cholesterol at 70 or lower and to keep your hemoglobin A1C as close to and as reasonably close to 5.2% as you can get it. Because at 5.8, you're pre-diabetic. And he had earlier mentioned a supplement like berberine that can help lower sugar as well as LDL cholesterol. So it might be something you could try.
My cholesterol is only 170-something. That's high.
Right. So just to be crystal clear, I'm talking about your LDL cholesterol, not your total. And you are in a range where you are forming plaque. And so one of the options that you have is lower your LDL further.
Other than that, there's not that much I can do, right?
Well, address your blood sugars because you're pre-diabetic.
Right.
Yes, that would be great. Right. All right, good luck on your journey.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah,
good luck, Sid.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Great questions. All right.
Thank you, Sid. And the phone lines are lighting up. Another question concerning high calcium score. We have from Kirkland, Ken is on the line. Hi, Ken. Maybe you got some of your questions answered. Maybe you've got another question.
It's a hot topic, the calcium
score.
Yeah, I wish I had Sid's 400. Mine was over 1,000.
Yeah.
And it kind of reflects my diabetes and other poor lifestyle earlier. I'm doing much better now as far as lifestyle. But what I was wondering, is there any non-invasive way of determining how much of my plaque is soft and unstable? I did a treadmill, and that I did actually better on the treadmill than I had in the past, and the doctor cardiologist said didn't see any significant ischemia during the treadmill test. So that's where I'm at.
Right. So there is a test. It's not simple. Insurance won't pay for it for what you need it for, and it's called the coronary CT angio. And a coronary CT angio is basically doing a CAT scan of your heart arteries. That is just like doing an angiogram through your wrist or your groin, you know, with catheters. Used as a CAT scanner to look at the vessels. They cost about, I can't advertise any companies, but I'll tell you there's a company in Bellevue that does coronary CT angio. They cost $900. And they can actually tell you have 30% here, 50% there, 90% here, and then you can even follow it over the years. Like with what am I doing? Are the plaques shrinking? It's going to give you the answer how much hard plaque, how much soft plaque, what happens to it over time. Calcium scores don't have the ability to really do that.
Oh, wow. So I didn't know this. So coronary
CT angio.
CT angio. And
right.
Insurance won't pay for it.
Well, they do under certain circumstances, but not for screening, not because
I
want to know. Right?
So
this company offers it to the public.
Okay.
And I can, of course, give you the information
so
you can use it in the future.
Right.
Just not probably proper to say on the air and advertise a company. Right.
Okay.
But people can find
out. They can find out. Yeah. If you want us to tell you, you can call us in our clinic and we'll be happy to share it afterwards.
Yes.
But we'll find out from Dr. Maiden. But very, very valuable, Dr. Maiden, because it tells us the soft plaque versus any blockage.
Right. Because the calcium will only show you the hard plaque.
That's right.
Right. And 3/4 of the plaque is soft plaque.
Yes.
It's not hard plaque.
Yes.
So you can actually see all the plaque, and you can follow it over the years. Like, what do I look like now? Just my cholesterol, my sugar, my lifestyle, my diet. Look at it again in 3 years. Did that 40% plaque get better? Am I winning? Did that 40% plaque get worse? Do I have to do more? For people who want to go down that pathway of prevention, it's very powerful.
Wow, I love that. Definitely, great. I will have more information in our clinic. So if you want to call back to get that, Dr. Maiden and I will talk later. But also, so say his score is now 1,000. What should he do? If he's seeing his cardiologist, what is his what are their recommendations? What is his next steps?
Right. And so, you know, the score of 1,000 tells us that you need a stress test, which you did. It looked fine. And then I would look at everything you can optimize metabolically in your health. And some things are hard, like where's my weight? Where's my exercise? You know, what quality of food am I eating? I personally believe that clean foods are what you need, not toxic foods filled with pesticides and herbicides and manufactured foods and manufactured fats. And so to eat clean, healthy food, keep your LDLs under 70, optimize your hemoglobin A1C as far as you can get with your diabetes. All of those things will make a difference. And then, you know, this may be a little harder to explain, but live with an open heart. You know, live your life in a way that is truthful to you. Because I believe one of the underlying causes of heart disease is when people are living incongruous with their own truths.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that creates a particular kind of physiologic effect. And so find your truths and live by them. And I think you'll find your heart will be healthier through that as well.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes.
Very philosophical. I think we all become philosophical as we see disease, right? I mean, sometimes we can explain it and sometimes we go, gosh, I don't even know why this happened, right? Mm-hmm. And so as we've treated pathology for years and decades, we develop a different attitude. And so, Dr. Maiden,
This is bringing up something for me.
Okay.
You know, so taking that to my own heart, an example for myself. So when I was a child, I lived on a street and I was bullied by a guy across the street. He was a couple years older than me, which was like insurmountable. And I can't say his real name, but his full name, but I call him Dougie. And Dougie just terrorized me. I mean, I couldn't go outside. Rocks were being thrown from around trees. He'd push me off my bike.
He had
a really mean dog that he would sic on me. Right? And when we moved away from that street, I was just overjoyed, right?
Yes.
But I carried Dougie in me for years. You know, I carried this experience. And one day I'm at Evergreen. And by the way, all the opinions I express today are my own and not those of Evergreen Health.
Right, there we go. There's your disclaimer.
Right. So a guy comes in the ER and I pick up the chart to go in the room to see him. And I look at his name and it's Doug in his same last name.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think it's Dougie, right?
Uh-huh.
So I go into the room and I see him and I'm thinking, that could be Dougie, you know.
Uh-huh.
And his age was right. And I'm talking to him about his heart attack. And I said, where are you from? He's from Waterloo, Iowa. That's where I was.
Oh, boy.
Okay. I thought, okay, this is him. This
uh-huh.
is him.
Uh-huh.
And I really had vengeance in my heart. I was thinking, how can I kill him? How can I not let him survive? Like, I was so...
All the power was in your hands.
I was so enraged. Really, I mean, it was a lot. But it was like at that extreme, I was like shaking, talking to him, because I had this really traumatic experience. And... You know, and I did. I went and I took care of him. I saved Dougie's life. But I asked him, I said, hey, you know, did you happen to grow up on Glennie? Because I lived there. And he's looking at me and I see his mind process. He goes, no, that was my cousin. We had the same name. And so I believed him.
Oh.
Right.
Okay.
I believe in retrospect, he probably figured it all out didn't tell me the truth. But anyway, so I take care of Dougie and I still... Like with this, and this is in me, and this is part of me. And then years later, just like sometime in the last year, friends are over for dinner, and I'm talking about this story. And we decided we would look up Dougie.
Okay.
So we find Dougie on the internet, and it's his obituary. And in the obituary, it says Dougie survived by his kids, and that he had lost his mother when he was 4 years old. Right.
Yeah.
And I had a whole different perception of Dougie.
Oh.
And I felt like all the compassion that I could have had, I didn't. And all of that I held inside myself, I didn't. And so I offer that as let's always be thinking about forgiveness and living
change.
In compassion. I think that's really healthy for our hearts.
It's healthy for our whole being.
Yes.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing that story, Dr.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, our show is up. We're to the end today. Thank you, Dr. Reuben Maiden, for coming in today on behalf of Dr. Maiden and Dr. Umat. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll see you next week.